The following autobiographical interview was held on December 1, 1994, with Mrs. Florence Daniluk, a Christian missionary born in 1930. The interview was conducted in Mrs. Florence Daniluk's study in her home on Lily Drive. The interviewer is Catherine Napolitano, a student of Kodiak College. Florence, can you start out by telling us a little bit about your family and growing up years in Canada?
Okay, I grew up in Western Canada, Alberta, on a farm. My father was a homesteader. My great-grandparents and my grandparents came from Ukraine in the early 1900s, and then both my dad and mom were born in Canada, and so all of us children were born in Canada. As a result, we still spoke the Ukrainian language, which I speak today. We were farming people. We come from a family of six children. They're all living today, except one sister that was murdered in 1971. My parents both lived long lives. My dad lived to be almost 90, mother 83.
Could you tell us about your religious background growing up in that family?
Well, I don't know if we'd use the word religious. I guess we were religious to me. I make a difference between religious and being a true Christian. A lot of people have a religion, but they don't have a peace and a hope. And my family was religious until they realized there was more to life than just religion. And my grandfather became a born-again believer, and as a result, this was a chain reaction in his family, and there was 9 children in his family, 11 children in my dad's family. And I guess their goal was not to promote a church or an organization or a group, but for a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Okay. At what age did you decide that you were interested in working as a missionary?
Well, religious or church experience. It's just that I knew that Christ loved me and died for my sins, and that would give me eternal life with the Lord, and so I wanted to share with other people. So once I was, after my conversion, I just kind of made that a goal for my life. I never really wanted to do anything else. And I guess what really really encouraged that is that we had many missionaries from foreign countries stay in our home, from overseas, from whatever countries that come through our little country church, that would stay with us as a family, and that made a real impression on me. And I felt that would be the most, the best way I could spend my life. And I never had a desire to do anything else, or even in these 47 years of ministry, I've never regretted or never wanted to do anything else.
What kind of training have you received in the mission field before you began your ministry?
Well, I finished my high school, and then I went to, I didn't go to a Bible college, I went to Bible school in Canada.
How did you end up in Kodiak, Alaska, and why Kodiak?
Well, after my husband and I were married, we went to the same Bible school. We went to Europe, and we lived in Europe, in Germany, for 12 years, from 52 to 65, to actually the end of 64. We worked in Europe in refugee camps with Slavic-speaking people that came to the free world during and after World War II. So we would go into the refugee camps while the people were waiting to be relocated into countries like Canada, the US, Britain, New Zealand, wherever they could go, South America. So while these people were in the refugee camps waiting to immigrate, that was kind of their temporary home, and my husband was like their missionary pastor. So we would go from camp to camp. Actually, we both did until the children came. We had 2 children. And then what we would do is, after the children came, he did traveling alone. There was, where we were located, there was always some kind of a refugee camp, but then he would go wherever there were more. He would also, even not just Germany, he would go into other countries like France and and went into, we were able to get into Yugoslavia and also into Greece. Wherever there was Russian, Ukrainian, Polish, or Slavic-speaking people, where they were a consolidated group of people of this, of these nationalities, of these languages, then my husband would go into the camps and have services, church services, where they'd be them there for as an encourager. We did a lot of relief work in the area of clothes, some in food, but little in medicine, because we didn't have any access to that.
And how did you end up going from Germany to Korea?
Christmas Day of 64, my husband's mother died in Canada. I have to say that the same mission board that sponsored us in Germany is the same mission board that started the Kodiak Bible Chapel. And even though the Bible Chapel today is an independent Bible church, but we were the mother founder, whatever you want to call it, of the chapel. His mother died Christmas Day of 64. He flew home for her funeral to Canada. My children were 5 and 8 at the time, and I stayed in Germany because we couldn't all afford to go home to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And then 2 days after her funeral, which was January 1st, 65, my husband was involved in a car wreck while he was still home after the funeral. So and in this car wreck, which was fatal, my husband, his dad, his sister, and her husband were all killed. The only survivor was a 14-month-old baby that had just been adopted by my sister-in-law and her husband. The adoption papers came through in December, and they were killed January 1st. I came home for the funeral of the four of them. Had 24 hours to pack my bags, whatever you take in 3 suitcases. Took my children, came home. The mission board gave me the time I needed for what they call like an emergency leave. I did a lot of public speaking and stuff during that time, but I was not required to go back. They wanted me to have proper time to choose as to what I felt I should do. So I did a lot of praying before, you know, really knowing what to do. And then through a series of events, I discovered there was an opening here to work at the Kodiak Bible Chapel. And I knew that it was the same mission board. So at that time, Woodrow Phillips was the pastor, which is Dave Phillips' dad. And I met him at the Bible school that my husband and I attended at a mission convention. And we talked, and he said there's an opening here to run the Christian bookstore that the church owned. So I came here, my first assignment. So I came here, my first assignment was a bookstore. I came here in... Mother was killed in January, and I came here in October 1965.
Okay. What year did you come here again, and what month?
October of 1965.
Okay. And that was right after the tsunami had hit?
Tsunami of 64.
Do you have any recollections about how things might have been affected by the tsunami? Were you affected by the tsunami at that point?
Well, I came here afterwards, but when I came here, everything was still. I came here in time for the work of urban renewal to start. The Bible Chapel was downtown, right where the Fish and Game Building is right now in that area. And because they were redoing the whole city, I still remember what the old city looked like, you know, the older buildings. And there's a lot of nostalgia in it, and I wish I'd save some of it, but I don't think they've saved anything except the old B&B bar, which doesn't give you much joy, you know. You don't have to put it in, but you can if you want to. I don't care. I remember the drugstore. I think it was still in the same location. Then there was the commercial Alaska commercial building, which was near the drugstore on the line, on the area where what's in there now, like an arcade or something. Same street as the bookstores on that side. Not the bookstore, what's on that side? A bar and a barbershop. Anyhow. I remember there was a statue of a big bear. I don't know what they did with that right downtown. They were just in the process. Ruth Ann went to a little one-room schoolhouse right downtown when we first got here. She was at the first grade. There was a little library there, and I don't know what they do with that little library. What else do you remember about that? About Kodiak? I remember when I first came in, I came in the ferry, and the ferry dock was on the Costa base. That's where we came in. When we came into town, that got the ferry, and we just had no idea because we just followed traffic. And we came into town, and it was very hard to find where people lived, how to get to Pastor Phillips' house, and all that went with it. And we're in the police station, finally we're able to get directions as to how to get to the church and find the pastor. I still remember there's a lot of fog. It was October, was chilly, was kind of a depressing situation, but I also knew that this was about laundry, so it didn't make any difference.
Now, you came to Kodiak as a single mom with two small children.
Mm-hmm.
How were you able to survive?
Well, at that time, the Bible Chapel had provided me with all the housing. I lived in an apartment back of the old church. There was two apartments there. So that was like my housing, my heat, electricity. That was all provided because mm-hmm. I went all in the church. The building was very, very old, and I can remember when it rained, I had buckets all over the place trying to catch the showers of blessing. How did I survive? Well, God's faithful. He just provided. When I came to Kodiak, I'm trying to think what my salary was there, but it was, humanly speaking, I should not have survived.
Mm-hmm.
But God was providing. In my family, they're strong believers that they're responsible for the widows and the orphans in the family. Mm-hmm. That's biblical. And I've through the years, when my children were younger, my family was very, they were very concerned that I would be looked after, and there was always extras from there, like clothes, money from time to time, just whatever they felt I needed. And this was not just my parents, but my brother and his wife and all my sisters and their husband. They were all very faithful in seeing to it that the children and I had enough. And we didn't live an extravagant life, but we certainly had everything we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we never went hungry.
Okay. Was there ever a time initially when you regretted coming to Kodiak?
No.
You've been with Kodiak Bible Chapel for many years now. Can you tell us about that church's past, how they got started, and how they've changed over the years?
Okay, the Kodiak Bible Chapel was started as a Christian Servicemen's Center way back, I'm not sure the exact year, but it had to be sometimes at the end of the war or right after the war when the Navy was still here. It started as a Christian Servicemen Center, and then it started as a missionary chapel, as a missionary church. By missionary, when you talk about a missionary church, it's where the pastor is not supported by the congregation, he's supported by a mission board. And then in time, the church grew, and the center was, as the most of the military moved on, and the Navy was not that big, and families were leaving, the church was, there wasn't need for a Christian Servicemen's Center to that degree. Then they started this church, built the chapel, and then there was two apartments in the back. There was a big rec room, and then they also started had a Christian bookstore in there. When I came here in 1965, we had a congregation of about 60 people. Andrew Phillips was the pastor. And we didn't have much of a parking space downtown because we were also sharing the parking lot, the Catholic school, and the their church was in, right, we were neighbors. Mm-hmm. So the parking lot was really small for both, you know, to house two churches. And so then Woodrow Phillips was a real man of vision, and he knew that one day the church would grow. So we started looking for property. Well, first of all, I have to say that Urban Renewal came in, and we had to sell to them because they were redoing the city. Mm-hmm. So they bought our property from us, and we had so many years to relocate. So I believe it was about 1967 that we started building. And I think it was 1968 we moved into the new building, which is on Island Lake Road. And Pastor Phillips was a man of real vision. He knew the church would grow. And when I came here, it was about 60, and today the congregation is about 300 people on a good Sunday morning. That's the average for Sunday morning, 275, 300. It certainly has grown in the area that we have people from our own congregation that have gone to the mission field and come back, or our mission field. We also support missionaries from all kinds of other mission boards. At the policy of Slavic Gospel Association, which is the mission board I'm with, that mission board is probably 70 or 80 years old now, their policy is to go into an area, start a church, and when it's big enough, they withdraw as a, what's the word I want? They turn the complete authority or the governing part of the church to the congregation. So, and that means, therefore, that the mission board is not responsible to finance the church or the pastor in any way anymore. So in 1967 or 68, about then, we moved into the new building, and at that time, the whole property was turned over to the Hodea Bible Chapel congregation. That meant at that point, they were free to choose what denomination they'd like to go with or stay independent. It was run and governed by pastor, the church board, and the votes of the congregation. And I guess our ministries are very diversified. We have, besides our regular Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Saturday, and Wednesday night prayer meeting, we have Sunday morning worship, Sunday evening worship, Wednesday prayer meeting. We have the Pioneer Clubs. We have a singles ministry. We have a strong high school and junior high youth ministry. We have many women's Bible studies, men's Bible studies, many prayer groups. So the church is a lot of counseling is done to help people through the church ministry.
Okay, you said that the church property got moved by Pastor, is it Wilson?
Woodrow Phillips.
I'm thinking the president. But you said the church property got moved. What's standing on the old church property in town now?
Well, it's real near to a fishing game, or fishing wildlife, but it's right downtown there, across from the Orthodox Church there.
Okay. And you said also that you are close to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
How did the two churches get along? Do you ever have a problem with that? Did they get along well?
We were smart. No, it was our problem.
Okay. Now, when the church moved its building, you were at that point living in the apartments. Where did you move with your family?
I moved into low-income housing.
Okay, and what was that area like?
It was the brand new apartments, very nice, very adequate for me and the children. Mm-hmm. It's up on the hill, Pacific Terrace.
And are they still standing there now?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same building?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then once the children went off to college, I moved into private quarters.
Is that
want that in there.
Okay. Put that in there. Mm-hmm. What do you feel are your primary responsibilities as a missionary in Kodiak?
Well, when I first came here, I guess my first primary responsibility is just to be me and to be there for people. Mm-hmm. Be there for hurting people and just let them know that they can have a personal relationship with Christ. It's not a church. It's not a denomination. It's not a ritual. Mm-hmm. It's getting to know the person of Christ in a personal way and having eternal peace, eternal joy, and knowing that one day you're going to be in heaven with the Lord. That's my primary. Mm-hmm. In heaven with the Lord through accepting Christ personally. I am a teacher. I teach home Bible studies. I teach since about 1978 or so. I started working with a lot with the military. Mm-hmm. I've done many, many women's Bible studies on the base. Many different groups have come and gone. Actually, I started that in about 1971 or 72. Then I started a young marriage and singles group in 1978. Which for many years was right on the base, in homes, then at rooms provided for me by the base chaplains. Mm-hmm. And then today I'm carrying on the same ministry, which includes military singles, young marrieds, divorced, and also the people in the community. We don't draw a line there, we just, whoever needs a corner or a place to belong through that type of setting, and I have it right in my home. I have a Bible study on Tuesday night in my home. The group meets again on Saturday for prayer time, and then on Sunday, every Sunday right after our morning worship, the young marrieds and the singles come to my home for dinner, for a potluck. And it's anybody who wants to. Whether you go to church or not, we encourage a lot of those that do come to church and just invite their friends that are lonely or need a corner to come to, invite them to bring them. And we've had this potluck going since about 1985. So I fed a mouth or two. We have fed a mouth or two. It's not my job. We do it. It's very, I feel it's very well organized and everybody contributes.
What could you tell us about the, without mentioning names, about the different people that come to you? And the problems that they're having. Do you find specific problems mm-hmm. on this island?
I think for one thing, you have a lot of people that come here, they're lonely, and they come from maybe a good solid background, but they come to the island and they're lonely, and before you know it, they're caught in a trap of, they don't like to be caught in. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you mention this, but they're caught in partying, drinking, drugs, mm-hmm. and then they want a way out. Mm-hmm. So people that have really gone the wrong direction, I deal with those kind of people. I deal with a lot of divorced people who are hurting and trying to save their marriages. What else can I say here? What was the question again?
The question was, do you find specific problems?
Oh, yeah. A lot of marriage problems, mm-hmm. folks struggling with alcohol and drugs, loneliness, mm-hmm. And I guess when people are really honest with themselves, they really fear the future and fear eternity. Your question.
Yes, it did. Okay, I understand that at different points in history, Kodiak has been referred to as a place of religious turmoil, especially between the Russian Orthodox Church and the Baptist congregations. Were you ever a witness to any of these events? And if so, is there anything that you would feel okay to talk about?
I was never a witness to any of this. So we're not Baptists. So. Mm-hmm. No, I was never a witness to this, and I think it's...
Didn't really affect the Bible chapel.
No, we just did our work. We're not here to cut people down. We're here to present the Lord to them, and then they can deal with it.
And what kind of relationship does the Bible chapel have now with the other churches on the island?
Well, I know that our pastors are very well involved in the ministerial alliance. Work well and are part of it, and we host the Thanksgiving service, which other churches host too. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've had what we call the Sinkspiration, where once a month we go to a different church and just sing for an hour. Mm-hmm. You'd have four, five, six, whatever churches involved in it.
Are there any particular stories about being a missionary in Kodiak that stick out in your mind? And if so, can you share them?
Save the bell. Hello? Well, there's many things in 30 years, of course, there's many things. But I think one aspect of my life here that has been very different is that when my daughter went to college in 78, I started board and rooming single girls. And I've had anywhere from 35 to 40 roommates, and I have survived. They've come from all walks of life. I've had school teachers, I've had college students, I've had artists, I've had young girls coming here to work in the cannery to get rich over the summer. I've had, I couldn't begin to even think of, I've had a doctor stay with me. I've had Coast Guards women stay with me. Let's see, what else have I had? It's been very, I've had some, you know, that's a real, would be a real, what's the word, diverse mm-hmm. bunch of women, because they come from all walks of life, different types of homes, different parts of the continent. It's been very, very interesting. I really enjoyed that part of, I've had the opportunity of seeing many of these young women really come to know God, know Christ in a very specific way. I have seen, a good number of them learn how to be homemakers and how to cook and clean, and some still can feel it. I used to be a wedding coordinator, and a lot of the girls, a good number of the girls were in my home, met guys through a singles ministry and were married here, and I did their wedding, so I've married, I have more than one daughter. I've planned and helped do the whole wedding. There's some weddings where I was a standing mom for the daughter or for the new husband or whatever. So that has been, and I was wedding coordinator, and basically I didn't do it for money, I did it for our church, because so many of the gals here did not have family. Mm-hmm. So, and once you've done one or two weddings, you're able to, even though it's a lot of work. And with each one, I feel like I really made an effort to make it very special for each girl. It wasn't something I was doing. It was their wedding. It was their special time. And as far as planning, as far as what they wanted, I feel like I worked as hard at it as I did in my own daughter's wedding.
Okay. Now you've had, did you say 35?
We've been 35 and 40 at this point.
Roommates. Who was your first roommate, and how did you make the transition from Ruth Ann, your daughter, leaving to deciding to take a roommate on?
Well, I feel God had his hand in that, because my first roommate was a school teacher who was looking for work, a very gifted, she was very, very versatile in what all she could do. Very attractive. She used to be a model. She used to ski. She was a school teacher. Mm-hmm. You name it, she did it. Mm-hmm. And she came here looking for a job, and I met her at church, came to church, and I invited her to my home for dinner, and we got talking and visiting. And at that time, Ruth Ann may have been in school, maybe just, I think it was her second year. And I got a call from her one morning. She'd come to church, and she was staying with friends, and then she was going to rent a little apartment. Well, anyhow, I got a call from her one morning. She was really distraught, and she was going through a personal problem in her life. And so I said, let me come and get you and we'll talk. So she said, I need to talk to you. So I went and got her, and I realized what she was moving into. She was moving into a little building that had no water, no hot water. Electricity was there, no heat. It was basically, she was renting a shell of a building, and she could put a mattress on this, how she's going to live. Mm-hmm. And when I saw how she's going to live, as we talked at my place, I said, just pack your bags, you're coming home with me. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning.
And from that point on, you just...
I feel like God sent it to me. I've never advertised. It's word of mouth. And I usually have at least two roommates. But there's been times where I've had as many as three and four, just on a very short term, you know, where they didn't have... And I don't make it a boarding house situation. It's a home atmosphere. They pay for their rooms and for their food. It's a boarding room situation. Actually, it's more of a roommate situation. We share. That's, I mean, because I don't charge them. We don't split the expenses. Mm-hmm. It's basically, I pay them, you know, because I do, I pay the bulk of the expense. Mm-hmm. They've just given so much that they pay because I feel it's part of ministry. Mm-hmm. There's been times when I haven't charged because I couldn't afford to pay. I feel it's part of my ministry, and yet I feel that as long as they're working, and they need to, and most of them do, they want to pay, you know, when they can. And it's kind of giving them a home away from home.
You said that you pay the bulk of the expenses, so you're meeting some of your expenses through your roommates, but where does the bulk of the money come from?
Well, where was what we call it, Faith Mission Board. Mm-hmm. And my salary is sent into the office, you know, it's pledges from people in churches, mm-hmm. and it is sent to mission headquarters in Illinois, and then I'm salaried through that.
Now, I know every few years that you leave and you go out for 6 months, I believe.
Three, four.
To travel. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that and why you
do that? We call it deputational work. That's where I go out and report to my donors. Mm-hmm. Report to my donors, and because of the, you know, constant change of cost of living, mm-hmm. if there's a shortage in my not enough to meet what is required to live here, mm-hmm. then... the mission board requires we try and upgrade our pledges. That's part of it, too.
Okay. So you're responsible to the mission board for
exactly.
telling them what you're doing mm-hmm. as a missionary.
And to my donors. I have to send reports out to my donors.
So you do this mostly through reports?
Newsletters.
Okay. And...
Keep talking.
Would you characterize Kodiak as a mission field more so today or more so when you first came here?
Well, when I came here, it was after the earthquake. People were hurting. The place was in an upheaval as far as the damage done from the tidal wave. Mm-hmm. A lot of rebuilding. I think when it comes to missions, to me, missionary work or missions or what, or even like the work of a pastor, basically our work is to bring people to a personal relationship with the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the need is ever, the need's always there. Mm-hmm. I think maybe today, very definitely because of the no absolutes in life. Everybody, you know, in Judges it talks about when there was a godly ruler, how the nation would come back to God, and then the godly ruler would die, and it says that everybody did that which was right in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening today, and because when you don't have any definite guidelines, and when you don't have absolutes, people are going to do that which is right in their own eyes, and as a result, it's not right in other people's eyes, and everybody else is hurting. Mm-hmm. What I am saying is people say, I can do what I want to do, it's not going to hurt him, but this is true. I mean, if I want to go out and get drunk or if I want to go out and use drugs, it's nobody's business. It is our business. Because they are our youth of today, they're fathers of today, they're mothers of today, and I can't break the law and it not hurt my family or my friends or my neighbors. And I think today, what I'm trying to say here is, we should be converted. Because there are no absolutes, people don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have boundaries as how far we can, you know, where a plane can take off from. We have boundaries where they can fly. And yet in our, you know, boundaries in every aspect of life, but it seems so much in our social and moral life today, there are no boundaries. And you cut that out, you've got a mess.
Mm-hmm. So you feel because of the general lawlessness of today's society that Kodiak and this country is still ripe for a mission field?
It will be till kingdom come.
Missionaries are primarily involved with conversion of people. Can you tell us a little bit about conversion and what that means?
Conversion means when you convert, you turn away from something, you turn away onto something, okay? And the way I understand from Scripture, and this was very clear, that I'm born in sin because of Adam and Eve, and people say that's their fault, regardless, you know. I'm a product of the old nature, and in everybody's life we're born with a vacuum, mm-hmm. and that vacuum is there because we've been separated from God, and that vacuum is there because we're all born with a nature to sin, mm-hmm. and we're also born feeling alienated from God, mm-hmm. and so people strive today by good works, by ritual, by ceremony, whatever, to gain God's favor. And according to the Bible, conversion is when I realize I turn away from all that and simply by what Jesus Christ did for me on the cross when he died. He said, it's finished. And he died to give me eternal life. And then when I come to the Lord and I say, Lord, I'm sorry for my sins. I turn away from them. And I believe when you died on the cross, you paid the penalty for my sins. I accept your offering, your sacrifice. And the Bible says, as many as received him, to them gave you the power to become the sons of God. I have to receive him by the act of my will, by faith. And that's conversion. It means I'm turning away from what I humanly think is the right way to get to God, mm-hmm. and doing it biblically. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, that doesn't leave room for just denominations or for church. It's an individual, personal thing. A lot of people are churchgoers, but they don't know without a doubt if they die, they're going to heaven. And if I don't know without a doubt that when I die, I'm going to heaven, what's the purpose of Christianity or religion? Forget it. I need something solid, and the Word of God is solid.
As a missionary, you play a prominent role in conversion of people. How do you go about doing that? How do you go about speaking with people about religion? Is there a certain way that you start a conversation, or do people primarily come to you?
It's both. I think basically I have to be their friend first. Mm-hmm. I be their friend first, unless they come to me and are really seeking, and mm-hmm. which I've had that happen. I find if a people that are seeking, they're tired of their way of life, or they're living in fear, or living in uncertainty, or they've gone through a tragedy. Something God has allowed something in their life to make you think there's more to life than this. Mm-hmm. So there's that type of people. Then there's a person that's saying, I'm just looking for peace. I just want peace. Mm-hmm. There's that type of person. And with each new friendship, I look for an opportunity to share with them who the person of Jesus Christ is, mm-hmm. and what he can do for them. But they have to have confidence in me. I guess I personally is not one that goes banging on doors. Mm-hmm. I pray that God will put me in touch with people who are really searching and hurting, mm-hmm. that I'd be there for them.
So primarily people come to you?
Or I seek them out as I see they have a need.
Okay. You must have been involved with many, or you must have seen many conversions. Do you have a few favorite stories that you'd like to share?
Well, let's see what... I have one young man who was in the Coast Guard. And he was really young, came from a very... very, very dysfunctional family, and even though he was in the Coast Guard, he knew he had no business with drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially drugs. And there was two young men on there that were Christians, and they kind of looked out for him because they knew that he was really in trouble, and he knew if he got caught, that would be the end of it. Anyhow, one night he'd been out partying, and he came back, and he was just so out of it, whether from drinking or drugs or whatever, that he was just getting back in the boat. He almost fell over the pier. Mm-hmm. And his buddy was there to catch him. And, of course, he was caught, and he was whatever. I know that he was restricted to the boat, couldn't go anywhere mm-hmm. except church. But that time I was having a Bible study in the base, and there was probably 30 or 40 young people in the group. And because it was a church function, he was allowed to go. And I remember we sang a lot and just shared, and I taught the lesson, and afterwards I let people as a whole know how they could really know God, how they could really know Christ. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, you know, if anybody would like to invite Christ into your life today so you can change your life, raise your hand, and everybody else's head was bowed, and he did. Well, no, he didn't. He raised his hand, but he didn't say anything. And then he told me later that when he was walking from the commander's home to his boat, which was probably a good 20-minute walk, he said he stopped in front of the base chapel and just bowed his head and invited Christ into his life. And there was such a dramatic change in his life that his superiors just couldn't get over the change in his life. And today he's married and has three children, has a neat Christian family. I remember picking up a young lady one time. She was just walking. I picked up, gave her a ride, and between Mission Road by about where the mission is itself to the post office. We talked, and she opened up a very, very hurting young woman. And she just—I don't remember all the details, but I know she was just devastated with life and everything. So I invited her to my home. She went to church with me the next day, and the next evening, Sunday night, I had a big youth gathering here. And next, she spent the night with me next morning as we sat at the breakfast table. She was just overwhelmed in what she saw, and that morning at the breakfast table, she bowed her head and invited Christ into her life. It was what she saw in these other young people she wanted. Mm-hmm. I had another young man who was transferred from Puerto Rico here, and a mutual friend said, look him up. Well, I didn't see him for months, and then one evening at 11 o'clock, he walks into my home. And he said, hi, my name is Mark, and I'm friends with so-and-so, and I just want to say hi. He said, you'll probably never see me again. I'm not a churchgoer, and I'm not a lot of people person. I'm a private person. So we talked, and on, and he left. This was May. And one Saturday night, the group here just finished prayer time. It was about 4 to 11. The phone rang, and it was Mark. It says, hi, my name is Mark so-and-so. I said, remember me? I said, no. And he gave his second name, and I said, yes, I do. He said, I really need to talk to somebody. So he came over, and he came into my office, and he just sat here, and he's probably 25, 26, and he just sobbed. He got himself into a real mess and had nowhere to go. And so after he told me all that was going on in his life, I told him that the Lord was able to same through this situation, but he had to turn his life over to the Lord, you know, and we talked, and I said, well, where do we go from here? I said, is there any reason why you can't accept the Lord now? He said, there isn't. And he prayed and invited the Lord into his life that evening. And from that day on, he's a changed man. He married one of my roommates, who was a Christian, and today they have a beautiful home. So who needs General Hospital? Who needs all my children?
You're 64 right now, and it has to be a hectic pace. How do you keep up?
Only God knows. I feel God has called me to that. I think when he calls you, he equips you. You also have to have wisdom how to deal with them, to understand them, to have fun with them. And I have been in this ministry since 78, so that's 78, 88, we're talking like about whatever years. And I have no plans for retirement, but as long as I can work. God has provided a huge apartment for me, especially built for this ministry. So I've got the room to do it. I've got the room for meals, for entertaining, for activity nights. And there are times, the group is not that big right now, but there were times the group was really big and they would just, I'd go to bed and they'd sit there and watch videos, or they'd just visit, or pray, or just play games, whatever.
You said that you've been given a large home for this ministry. How did that happen?
Well, the owner of the home, who goes to our church, I don't know his name, when he was building the apartments, he was new to our church then. He called me one day and said, "Want to talk to me?" And I couldn't imagine why. He came over and showed me the blueprints for his whole complex. And he said, "God has burdened me to build you an end apartment so you'd have plenty of room for what you're doing." And it's just amazing. I really feel God led him because the apartment I have is, I have three bedrooms and an office upstairs. And downstairs, it's all under one open beam, 10-foot ceiling, huge entryway, fireplace, huge living room, dining room, huge kitchen, huge pantry, woodshed. I mean, he took everything into consideration would be needed to carry on the type of ministry.
Okay.
Yeah?
I've noticed that this home is a clearinghouse for more than just the counseling aspect of it, but also for food. How do you go about doing that, and how does all the food that you you get taken in, and I know you give it out to a lot of families. Can you tell us about that part of your ministry over the years, how that came about?
Well, basically, I have learned that when people say, "Do you want food?" I always take it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it, but I always know families that need it. I mean, I do need it to a certain aspect because I do feed a lot of people. Like, our Sunday dinners can be anywhere from 25 to 40 to 50 people. We never know. And I always have backups, so I'm prepared. I mean, I've done this in years, you know. And it's always a potluck. But I always have things in the pantry or the freezer or whatever that I can dig out in case, you know, we have more than we plan. Whenever people say you want food, I always take it because I always know families, whether in the community or through the church, whatever, that have needs. And I feel that if food's given away, I know where to give it.
You must have seen a lot of families struggling.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about some of the struggles, the common struggles that you see?
Well, a lot of single moms, mm-hmm. or even single dads.
Mm-hmm.
The struggle with having enough time for the children to have to work. Struggle to make ends meet. I think of families that want to get off welfare and gone to work. You go off welfare, and they do it because it's the right thing to do, and they do it because of their own dignity. Is that what you put that in?
Mm-hmm.
And then they struggle because they don't have the same coverage for dental. They don't have the same. In other words, under welfare, everything is covered.
Mm-hmm.
You go to work, it's not. And when you have 2, 3, 4, or 5 children, and you're the sole breadwinner, it's a struggle. So I've seen that aspect. I've seen also where they, because their work, they're not there when the kids come home from school.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are sick, what do? Where they put, so I think one of the biggest things I've seen, which is everywhere, is the single parenting. And having been a single parent myself, my kids are 5 and 8 when their dad was killed, I know what single parenting is.
What kind of atmosphere do you feel Kodiak has provided for families compared to when you first came to Kodiak with your own? And now, do you feel it's a good town to raise a family?
I think still overall it's a good town to raise a family in. It was a good atmosphere when I came. I'm sure that today we're seeing a lot more with, you know, like perhaps drugs and alcohol, and neither even talking about gangs, whatever, which is not good. But I still think it's a good town to raise your children. I think it's still a much safer haven than other places.
Why do you say safe haven? What do you think makes Kodiak so safe? Or a lot of people comment that they like Kodiak for raising children.
It's still like a little country place where kids can play. You don't have to worry about every time you turn around there's somebody shooting one another, or and I know the drugs are here, but not to the extent that they're, and kids are free to go outside and play. There isn't that danger of children being taken and kidnapped and exploited and all that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's here to a point, but nothing like it is stateside.
What do you feel you have accomplished in Kodiak throughout the years since 65 that you've been here?
Who knows? Well, I feel that God has given me hundreds and hundreds of extra children. I have literally had hundreds of young people go through my life, through my home, and that's no exaggeration. Because with the Coast Guard here, you have a transition. You have people coming all the time, and so by the time we're through a group of 20 or 25, and before you know it, four or five of those will leave, and a new group will come in or whatever. So I feel like what they have learned, what I've taught them through Bible study, through my life, and I trust my life as an example to them, through principles, through morals, through example, that they have taken, and many have. Many leave, get married, and may run into a snag in their marriage or in their own personal life. I mean, I'll hear from them from years, but you'd be amazed how many call when they're in trouble. So I just feel like I've been a spiritual mother to many and just a mother to many. I feel that God has used me to just be an encourager, taught them the word. I'm sure that because we are human, there's many things I would like to change, but I feel like I've had a very, I feel like I've had a very fulfilling life, and it's because I have worked with people. And the one thing that I have learned is that working with people is not often is not for my comfort. It's going to cost me something that's worth it. I mean, when you get called at 1 or 2 in the morning because somebody, that's discomfort, but that's right. Or if you need to, one thing which is always true, if you're deal with people that are going through a hurting time, you spend a lot of time with them and you're hearing the same thing over and over and over again to where you feel like it's overwhelming. But they need to talk and you need to listen. Another thing, people know when you're listening just with your ear, and they know when you're listening with your heart. Big difference.
If you were given a chance to speak with a missionary who was going to come to Kodiak, what would you tell them from your own experiences here about Kodiak?
Go for it.
Would you have any advice for them on how to go about doing that?
Well, it depends on what, you know, what type of field they go in. Each field is different. You know, some would be working, say if they're going to work strictly with youth, they'd have to be prepared with a lot of activities. Whereas the age group I work with, they plan their own activities. What would I tell them?
Strictly about the being a missionary on Kodiak Island.
Well, you have to be prepared for isolation. Isolation doesn't bother me. You have to be prepared, there's no malls. You don't always have what you think you should have. It's not always available. See, those things don't bother me. Because I feel like God has given me a spirit of contentment in realizing that there's millions of people that have so much less than I do. You know, and Scripture's pretty much clear about, you know, you have food and clothes and warmth, be content.
What is your favorite thing about living on Kodiak Island?
The work I do. The people. Just the beauty of the island. Just life. It's all favorite.